With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello and welcome back to Brett and Cliff Flea Circus. My name is Cliff, and I can see a man that today I'm going to call Jack Frost.
Oh, and I think I know why you're going to call us Jack Frost, actually. I was going to give you a choice of what you want to call us this week, actually, but you've done it anyway. I was going to give you the choice of Man at Arms.
Okay, excellent.
Or Johnny Five.
Or Johnny Five.
What?
Well, what's a robot?
Or Johnny Five, yeah.
Man at Arms. Right. Terrible, terrible name.
What?
Man at Arms.
A stupid old name.
Old man with a mustache. Really crap. Man anybody doesn't know, he's of He-Man and Masters of the Universe. He was like, well, he was the Man at Arms. He was the, what would he be called? A munitions executive.
Expert. I think so. I mean, is that his God-given name, do you think? Man-at-Arms?
Mr. Man-at-Arms. I mean, probably called like...
Just his nickname?
David Man-at-Arms.
David.
What was he...
stupid name.
Was he Teela's dad?
Yes.
Teela the...
Yes, he was.
Was she a love interest? I was going to say love interest, but I'm not sure whether she
what
was.
What, for Man-at-Arms? Well, I hope
I
not.
I hope not.
Bit
no.
Incest going on
there. Prince Adam.
Well, did Prince Adam have a love interest? Did he? I can't really remember.
No, well, I always assumed he was a homosexual young man.
Did you?
Something that I'm sure the brilliant Twitter account Grumpy Skeletor would confirm.
I think that's true. Yeah. Yeah, I like Teela though. The thing Teela... about the He-Man figures, right? Uh-huh. I remember when you used to be able to squash their heads in.
You can squish their heads, yeah. Their bodies were rock solid, but their heads were squishy.
I don't know why.
Not all of them, though. Not all of them.
No? Maybe that was just like the first ones.
They had rubbish names, didn't they?
Mossman.
Mossman, I was going to say. There was definitely, was B-Man one, the bad news.
Yeah, I think he was off She-Ra, the B, wasn't he? And who was Ram-Man? He was good. Ram-Man.
The toy didn't really work, did it?
No.
He meant to like press a button, squish him down, press a button, and he would fly off. Because that was his power, was he would ram people with his big metal head.
That's right, yeah.
But yeah, the toy didn't really work.
The Stink Man or something.
Yeah, Stink Man. Something he was like a skunk. He had a funny smell as well, didn't he? So did Moss Man. And a lovely, lovely touch.
He did. He felt nice, didn't he? Moss Man. Wrecked him when you took him in the bath, though.
Ruined, absolutely ruined. Anyway, we're not here to talk about He-Man toys, although I think we could for a long time.
Probably.
All I can see, you're back on the standard No Frills lager, not the brand No Frills, just lager by its name alone.
Yeah, just the normal Morrison's thing, yeah.
I've got a bottle of white wine that I obviously bought some time ago for a reason. I don't really drink white wine. And I was making a steak a couple of nights ago and I opened it up thinking it was red. Because I don't know if you can see, there's no words on it. So I would imagine part of the reason I bought it was for this colourful label.
Right, yeah, it looks like R2-D2 on the front there.
Yeah, it's a tram.
Is it?
Or a funicular, maybe. Anyway.
You deserve it.
Yeah, can, hang on.
Hey, I know, can you see that?
I was just going to
suffered an injury.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's that? You've got a sticking plaster on your between your thumb and forefinger.
I bont me hand making cheese on toast. Can you believe that? That's why I'm not allowed in the kitchen. You're making steak in that, and I injure myself making cheese on toast. I mean,
good
if I was to make
cheese
a steak,
on toast,
it's the best. Anything on toast, I think, is optimum meal
cheese.
For a man.
Never used to like cheese on toast and stuff before, but I love it now. Like, really love it.
Yeah. I make special cheese on toast.
Do you embellish it with anything?
I do. I put tomato puree on the toast and make a kind of pizza. What do you think of that?
I was not expecting that. I thought you were going to say, like, fucking bit of Tabasco sauce or something in it. But
no. Tomato puree. Tomato.
Or just
puree
like
on the bottom of the
raw.
Raw? Like just you know, like the paste.
Tomato paste.
Yeah.
Very strong, though. You're meant to water that down, aren't you?
Nah, I don't do that, man. I don't do
is
that.
Is it not a bit... does it not give you a...
I spread it out. I spread it thinly,
Very thin, I would imagine.
Next time you're over, I'll make you me special cheese on toast.
Fucking hell, I'll book flights now.
I'll put the tree up as well. I'll put it up on Sunday. I love putting the tree up on that. So it's the start of Christmas, isn't it?
Do you have a ritual?
The Christmas music's got to be on and stuff like that. You know what I mean? That's what we do. We always did the same when I was young, when I was little. Mm-hmm. My parents always had the Christmas music on and everything. And you had to do it. Everybody had to dress the tree and things. It was ruined somewhat this year, though, because I didn't put a record on or an album or anything. It was just the radio. There was like a Christmas radio channel that we'll put on.
Okay.
And Gary Barlow's new song, unfortunately, came on, which is the most horrible song I've ever heard in my life. What? It's also got Michael Bublé on it as well. It's called Incredible. Comment. It's not incredible.
Do all of his songs have to be called something like that? Like strong, stronger, incredible, fucking. He does me head in.
Does my head in.
A dull man, very dull.
It was saved by a Spanish Christmas song that I haven't actually heard before, which was amazing.
Feliz Navidad.
Yes, it was.
Feliz Navidad.
I loved it. Yeah, it was. Christmas was saved by that song.
Jose Feliciano. It's amazing.
Yeah,
it is amazing. Light My Fire, the Spanish version of Light My Fire.
Uh-huh.
It's great.
The first time I've ever.
Oh, really? I love that song.
My lass.
Honestly,
she was singing along. It's like, what's this? It's amazing.
At this point, I should probably say I'll probably get quite excitable during this episode, which is our first of four Christmas episodes. Mm-hmm. This one, we're going to talk about music, a couple of albums in particular. But I guess we'll be talking around that with some other stuff as well. So, yes, Feliz Navidad. I just love that when it goes into the chorus, where I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. It's just great.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's just what
all
good Christmas songs should do. It's just, it's proper lifts you up, doesn't it? As soon as that comes in. Love it. I really, really like that song.
39 years old, and that's the first time I've ever heard that song. So,
we're always learning.
Like I say, from the Gary Barlow to that, I mean, it just like it was just much better for us.
It's like from the pits of hell to
it is
Heaven's Gate, isn't it? The difference between those two songs. And I haven't heard Barlow's, and I hope I never.
I love Tinsel. Do you like Tinsel?
It's fallen out of favor, hasn't it?
Well, not with me. Definitely not with me.
But the general public.
I love Tinsel. I also have do you have novelty baubles or novelty things that you put in the tree? So one of the things the wife has is a gizmo little toy.
Amazing.
With dressed as Santa.
I would love that.
That's in the tree.
I would love that.
Yeah, and mine's the yellow submarine.
So Tinsel, I like it, but I think it's fallen out of favour with the general public. So I don't have any because I don't know if you can actually get it anywhere anymore. It's a big hit in my mum and dad's.
When I was younger, I had a real tree. Well,
did
we used to have a real tree. But the pines, the little needle things get stuck in your feet. They're awful. When it sheds.
I couldn't be arsed.
Yeah, I mean, I work in schools, and schools have always got a, or generally, they've always got a real tree.
Because they're massive, aren't they? You couldn't just have a little one. Like, I bet in individual classrooms, they have little fake ones.
Aye. But like in the gym or the, you know.
In the gym?
Where they have assembly. That's what it's called. Where they have like an assembly and stuff. Not that I have assemblies anymore. Those type of gatherings are banned, obviously, aren't they? But that's where the tree lives. And generally, because I'm a sports coach, I've got to stand in front of the tree to protect it from balls flying around and stuff like that. It's an awful time. But yeah, we used to have a real tree, and we used to have to put it in water, I think.
All sounds too much hassle. I think there's people that sneer on those of us that have fake trees, and I want to tell them they can fuck off because it's hard work, isn't it? It's hard work.
It is.
You don't win any prizes. No prizes by having a real tree other than your own fucking smugness.
unless you're the Griswolds, because then you can have that squirrel, can't you? That is kind of like a prize.
Yeah, but it's a nightmare, isn't it? The squirrel.
It is for the Griswolds. It did. What a brilliant Christmas film that is.
What have we been watching on the telly? Or should I just tell you what I've been watching?
Tell what you've been watching.
Well, I can't remember. Sky Arts has played a big role in my life in the last couple of weeks.
Is it for the nakedness?
No, because it's nighttime watching.
You liar.
No, it's not.
You lying?
I'm telling you, it's not. I've watched a load of like music documentaries, and I watched a documentary, that Gaza one from a couple of years ago, the other day.
All right, yeah. Have
you seen that?
Uh-huh. I have seen that.
I don't think it really tells the full story, but it's like, it's more like Gaza for England, isn't it, rather than Gaza in general?
Yeah.
The early Newcastle bit's all right.
Still watchable.
No, it's good, and I think he's good in it. I had a little bet with myself how long it would be before he started crying. It was about 4 minutes, I think. About 4 minutes before he says, "I'm starting to cry now." Didn't just cry. Says he's going to cry. So there's that. But I'll be watching this.
He announces he's going to cry.
He does announce it. There's a series called Video Killed the Radio Star, where they basically look back at some like music videos of a particular artist. It's a pretty shit show, to be honest. But it's nice watch. Like, there was one about Neil Young videos, but like from the 80s and 90s, when he was obviously a bit like shit or like didn't give a fuck. So that was quite good. And I've also been watching the TV show, and I've watched it all, The Undoing. Have you seen that? Do you know what it is?
No, I've not heard of that one. What's that?
It's on Sky Atlantic, I think. It's it's Hugh Grant and Nicole Kidman are a wealthy couple who...
Right.
What happens in it? So they're like perfect life. They're rich. He's a kid's doctor. She is just rich, I think. I don't know what she's meant to do. She's just rich. Donald Sutherland is her dad. I presume Donald Sutherland is about 95 now. He's certainly got grey skin. And
he's everybody's dad, isn't he?
He's in everything, isn't he? Like, anytime there's a series with a rich family that needs a dad, he's the dad.
he's the go-to guy, isn't he?
he really is ancient, isn't it? But this series, it's only six parts, and it is fucking excellent until the last episode. Yet again, it's totally let down. It's a proper whodunit. Like, what? Loads of twists. They're laying little things in. Basically, it's a rich school, private school, and there's a young mum whose kids go to it. She's a bit out of place, and she's a bit self-conscious that she's not as kind of flash as the rest of them. And then, anyway, she ends up being brutally murdered, and the husband, Hugh Grant, disappears the same night that she gets murdered. Previously, there's been no link to them. So, obviously, you think that Grant is the man to do it. But then over the course of the next five episodes, Elaine, well, he's had an affair with her. He admits it. But so is it the husband? Is it their son? He finds out he knew. So is it him? Is it Sutherland who, you know, he doesn't want anything to happen. There's just all this stuff. And he has a big spoiler at the end. Just Hugh Grant. Just Hugh Grant, that is it. Six episodes about who could it possibly be? Oh, it's not Hugh Grant. Obviously, it's too obvious to be Hugh Grant. And he's protesting his innocence all the way through. Just turns out it is Hugh Grant.
Like, I think what they've done there is they've just copied the same plot as the Steve Bruce book Striker.
I think they have, haven't they?
That's exactly what they've done. I mean, Steve Bruce wants to be suing them, doesn't he? He really does.
I don't know whether they've, like, it is based on a book, but I don't know whether they're, like, throwing all this stuff in to, like, and then think, actually, it's so clever that it is just what you think it probably is at the beginning.
it's so clever. The simple thing is the right simple thing, answer.
That's right. I have to say, Hugh Grant is brilliant in it. By about is the he? Third episode.
I'm not a massive fan, like. No, I like the new Guy Ritchie fellow. I thought that was really good. I like that.
I think he's brilliant in it. Gentleman, is it? That one?
Gentleman, yeah. I like that fellow.
Honestly, he's very, very good in it. He's so good at playing this kind of... He pretty much plays himself to an extent, as he always does, I suppose. But like with this kind of righteous anger, and he's very stubborn and stuff. Nicole Kidman, I'm not knocking anybody for having plastic surgery or work done or anything like that. And, you know, Nicole Kidman's a beautiful lady, I'm sure. I don't find her, like, sexy or attractive at all. Not even in the Eyes Wide Shut.
Not even in Dead Calm, when she had the curly ginger hair.
I fucking hate Dead Calm. I really, really hate it. Like, quite a violent reaction about Dead Calm, actually.
There's a sex scene in it that, because I always remember it was one of the, like, inappropriate moments. We're on holiday in Aberdeen, and
of course,
we're about 7 or 8.
I know why you're in Aberdeen, but most people will be going Aberdeen for a holiday. Fucking hell,
I know. Yeah, we've got relatives in Aberdeen, but so they put this film on, obviously, it's a thriller and stuff like that. But doesn't a short get a denim shorts that I'm wearing at this precise moment get the completely same one, ripped in half?
Yeah, I think you bought them off either, didn't you?
I did. But who's the guy? Who's the Sam protagonist? Reels, yeah, but there's who's the other one, man, who's, like, awful? What's the, he was going out Google with Kelly right Brook and that, wasn't he?
Jason Statham. Billy Zane.
No.
Billy Zane.
Billy Zane, he's guy, horrible, isn't he? He's
always horrible.
And he tears our denim shorts in half.
He does, yeah.
I remember my cousin, who was a bit younger than me, was just like, he kept talking about this scene in this film. It was just so inappropriate. It was awful.
Anyway, yeah, I don't like Dead Calm. But yeah, I mean, she's 53, right? And she looks incredible for 53. Like, no getting away from it. She does. I'm sure she must have had some work done to look that good. But like I say, whatever, that's fine. But in comparison, Hugh Grant, who is 60, right? Not a massive difference, but enough to start looking old, I would say. Nicole Kidman looks about 30 in it. And it looks like Hugh Grant's got those extra 20 years on his face. So it's like, it's weird because she's so smooth, like, so smooth. It's strange. And there's one bit where she's running and it's kind of slow-mo and, like, her mouth's, like, flapping, you know, like if a dog was running. And they're like, but all of her, none of her face does. So her face is entirely smooth apart from her lips, which are, like, kind of flapping like a dog would be, but are, like, running in the wind.
I think there's a limit of plastic surgery, isn't it? I think Michael Jackson should be, like, the benchmark for all these actors and actresses who get plastic surgery. Not too much. I mean, a little bit you can get away with, do you know what I mean? But once they go over a certain threshold of plastic surgery, you can tell. And I think
I guess it depends, like, whether it's responsible or not, or whether someone's doing it because of, like, more deep-rooted problems like self-esteem or stuff like that, or whether they just, like,
well, they're doing it look younger after, so they can get you.
Honestly, her face is so smooth. Maybe she's just got great genes. I don't know.
Maybe
she had some really great jean shot.
Billy Zane sort of that, didn't he?
what a bastard. But anyway, that's that.
Well, that's not very Christmassy, Cliff.
I know, so let's get some Christmas stuff going. We listened to some Christmas music, didn't we?
We did. We did listen to two albums, didn't we? Mm-hmm. Two Christmas albums. One of which I had no idea existed.
Yeah, same here.
The other one, I did. So we'll listen to Ringo Starr's Christmas album, which is called I Want to Be Santa Claus.
Yeah.
And we'll also listen to Bob Dylan's as well, which is Christmas in the Heart.
Yeah.
I didn't know it existed. I'm glad that you told us it did. Because, I mean, it was interesting to listen to. I mean, it's not that long ago either, is it? That
99, so, I mean, decent amount of time.
Yeah, I suppose so. Now that you say that, Jesus Christ. I mean, that was the time that me and you were buying albums and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I suppose that's what I meant.
Yeah.
So to be unaware of the fact that it existed.
Yeah, I know. Like, I genuinely didn't know. I like it. I like it. I think I might. I couldn't get it on Spotify. I've been listening to it on YouTube. I think I might buy it so I can add it to my Christmas collection. Well, I like it. What do you think?
Do you? I like some of it. Yeah. I like some of it. I like you know, these like original songs.
Yeah,
the ones
I agree.
He's wrote himself. Those are the better ones.
Yeah, they are, aren't they?
It Falls Down, I think. Yeah, Where It Falls Down is where it's more of a traditional song, where there's obviously better versions out there that you can listen to.
Yeah, I mean, Winter Wonderland.
Also they're trying to put this kind of Beatles spin on it, whereas, you know, if you're watching like a really poor Beatles documentary that doesn't have the rights to the music and they have this like generic sort of Beatles music, that's what it sounds like. But the ones that he's done himself, I like them ones.
Yeah, I think I am absolutely with you. I think the original songs on this album are really good. And it is the covers that it falls down on. A couple of them are like okay and fun. Mm-hmm. Like I say, Winter Wonderland is pretty poor. But so it's written and produced by him and a guy called Mark Hudson. Are you aware of this guy? He made three or four albums with Ringo around this period.
No, I'm not aware of him or what he's doing or anything.
So me neither really, but once I looked into who he was, I kind of remember him from this. You might not have watched it, I don't know, but when Sharon Osbourne was on X Factor.
Uh-huh.
You know, when they go to the judges' houses and they normally have, and he has my songwriter or my vocal coach or whatever. She had this guy, Mark Hudson was this guy, and he's got he looks like Billy Connolly a bit in the fact he's got like a goatee beard and long hair, and he's got like a rainbow colored like goatee beard and stuff. And I remembered him looking like that. So I saw a picture of him and I was thinking I recognize him from somewhere, and it's from that. So I had seen him on that. He's like produced and co-wrote loads of stuff in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
He's probably a very rich man, but a man that nobody really knows what he's done. He's obviously not the front man for anything. But what he clearly can do is write a Beatles-y catchy song with Ringo Starr, because he's kind of co-wrote what, the five songs on this that are originals.
Yeah. I mean, the best song for me is the first one. I love that one, because the thing is, right, glam rock, right, and Christmas songs just go together perfectly.
So he's done a great, that's what I mean by this guy is doing a great job of just going, what are the most popular Christmas songs? Are the glam rock ones? And you're a Beatle. So let's have a Beatly glam rock. I mean, glam rock just stole from the Beatles and made it, turned it up a bit, you know. So he's just combined that with Ringo and gone, let's do it. Also, Jeff Lynne on backing vocals.
He always gets in. He always worms himself in, doesn't
like
he, Jeff?
They're trying to like close the door and he's like, he's foot, you know, on cartoons, his foot comes through the door.
He just turns up when I've heard you're recording an album.
Jeff, man.
No, you again, Jeff, man. We've changed the number six times. God, Jeff.
And he seems like a very amiable man. But I think I've said it before, nobody's ever seen more than 15% of his face for the last 30 years.
That is true, isn't it?
That is true. So that's no true. Wonder he can sneak in.
Perhaps it's been electrocuted off. He's suffered an electrocution problem, hasn't he? From his light orchestra. Why does he keep popping up, though? I mean, what's his beef?
I don't know. Like,
do you know what I mean?
I think it's because he's a nice guy, like sympathetic to the Beatles guys. Like, he can obviously, he was involved in the anthology stuff, and this is after that. Yeah. And he was involved in the Traveling Wilburys. So, George, I think when the anthology stuff was coming out, I think basically nothing happened. Like, George, I feel, is the most stubborn of all of them. So, I think he would be the one who would be saying, you need to, I'm doing it, but only if he comes along, kind of thing.
Right.
So I think that's probably how we got involved. But yeah, I mean, I like a best of ELO, but
oh yeah, me too. I mean the album cover with the spaceship on, I always remember that.
Oh yeah, yeah, you know, absolutely. My dad used to have it. We used to listen to it in the car and stuff like that. But yeah, he's on there.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't really tell that it's him backing vocals. It could be anyone, I think.
It could be.
But yeah, I mean, for anybody who's missing what I would describe as a glitter stomp, you can listen to Come On Christmas, Christmas Come On. You never need to worry that you can't listen to Rock and Roll Christmas anymore, because this can take its place. Can't it?
It can. Yeah. I was taken aback by it. Actually, I thought, as soon as it came on, I was like, yeah, I really like this.
Yeah.
This sounds really, really good.
Straight out the blocks, the album with this, isn't it? Sadly, Winter Wonderland is next, I think. But it does redeem itself. Like you say, for me, I think the title track, I Want to Be Santa Claus, is okay. I'm not a massive fan of that. I think the best, Christmas Eve, is a beautiful, beautiful song. It's like it's like Good Night, isn't it?
Good Night, in it. That's exactly what I was saying. Or thinking when it was on, it's like I said, the ones that he's done are the best ones, for sure, I think. I mean, the covers and stuff like that, people have done them before.
Like you say, they're okay.
That's the thing.
You can stand the chance of listening to Christmas songs for a couple of hours and you hear those songs over and over again, and these won't be up there with the best versions of them.
Definitely not. I mean, there's one called Christmas Dance. It's a bit like a skiffle song, which
I like that one.
A smile to me face.
I like
as
that
well.
One. Very rockabilly, skiffly. I like that one.
Yeah.
Sounded a bit like...
So, I mean, there's all these...
Go on.
There's all these kind of old influences, isn't there, from the Beatles and stuff like that, the skiffle and things like that. The thing I do like about it is there's plenty of bagpipes.
There's a lot of bagpipes. There's a little bit of a calypso as well.
Oh, yeah, I could do without that. Like.
Yeah, that one's... that's a calypso and reggae version of, or a Caribbean version of White Christmas.
That's right.
Not so hot.
No.
But yeah, I think like the Christmas Dance, the rockabilly one, that's actually sounds a little bit like Richard Hawley and the kind of rockabilly guitar kind of thing. Dear Santa, that's like a McCartney kind of doo-woppy kind of style song.
Yeah. Did you think there was a little bit of a John Lennon dig in there, where there was a bit about I've heard about stopping wars at Christmas and all that kind of stuff. Did you hear that bit?
I mean, you wonder whether
maybe it's a playful little dig, a playful dig, I would say.
Yeah, I think it was a mention of it, whether he's really going to have a go at them for it. I don't know, but I think if you know, if you get,
yeah, I don't think it was a full blown. I don't think it was. It was like a how do they sleep type thing. I don't think it was anything like that, was it?
And then probably the main thing on is he covers the Beatles' 1967 Christmas fan club song "Christmas Time Is Here Again," which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
The Beatles doing a kind of psychedelic little Christmas chant. And with this, Joe Perry from Aerosmith on guitar.
Hi, and it's a very short guitar solo as well, isn't it?
It's, that's about 10 seconds. How much are you going to pay for that?
Hi, well, exactly. I wonder how much.
It's nice. It was, it's a nice solo.
It is nice.
But listen to the song three times.
It's very brief.
Yeah. Genuinely, the third time I was like, where is this guy? I can't hear him. Where is it?
Yeah.
Because you expect it to be like it to start with like a guitar if he's got on it. But then, about two minutes, ten seconds, it'll come in. So that's nice to hear because I think that's actually a pretty cool song. Maybe the most surprising number is the final track, which I texted you about. Paxum Umbiscum.
Yes. We all love a bit of Latin, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, perfect for Christmas.
Yeah. I mean, were you ever taught Latin at school?
No, I think people think because I went to a Catholic school and I went to a Catholic church and stuff every week. But beyond the priest saying a few words in Latin, like I think if it was 20 years earlier, there'd be a lot more Latin going on, but not when I went to school and stuff. So no, not at all.
No, me neither. I mean, the only Latin I've been subjected to is like the Latin on football teams' badges.
I was going to say,
do you know what I mean? That's it.
I was going to say the same thing. Or also, when you're looking at a page with a dummy text on it, and it says, Laura Mixon.
So Latin's definitely a mystery to me. Like, in fact, both albums that we're going to talk about have Latin in them.
Yeah, they do. But what do you think of this song?
I liked it. I mean, it's a little bit menacing. Ringo just going, Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas all the way through.
Ringo's ad-libs throughout this album.
Where he does that a lot, doesn't he?
I think it's his persona, isn't it? I think when he's working with this guy, and like I say, I haven't really listened to the other albums, but I would imagine if I listened to the other albums that this guy has produced and recorded with Ringo and co-wrote with him, that they'd keep being these little ad-libs and nods to his like kind of Beatley persona all the way through, where, you know, like, because it's on those Beatles songs, it's like, rock on, George, one time for Ringo, and all of that. I think, like, he's trying to inject that kind of stuff in these quite a bit. But I don't mind. I don't mind. It's an enjoyable album as much as the covers are kind of not great.
It's
fun, you know.
It is fun.
If it was a full album of that, I wouldn't be enjoying it. Uh-huh. But when they're like every other song, it's okay.
No, I'm glad I listened to it. I mean, he's living up to his Ringo peace and love persona, isn't he? Throughout the whole thing, and even like the title of the album, "I Wanna Be Santa Claus," it's like I want to spread peace and love, isn't it? It's that kind of thing. I'm glad I listened to it. I enjoyed listening to it. And I was pleasantly surprised by the first track as well, because I really like that
first and last tracks are the ones that stand out, I think.
They are.
So
definitely.
The last one, just said the Latin one, it's all kind of like Harrison style mystic strings and stuff.
Within
isn't
you,
it?
Without it's very, you, isn't it?
It's very synthesized. It's obviously not,
yeah,
you know, like Harrison had the real guys doing it. It's very synthesized version of it, but I still think it's got something. I quite like it.
I agree. I like the first one, the last one. I would say they were my favourites, I think. And that Skiffle one, I quite like that one as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm really glad I listened to it. Yeah. You can't beat a Christmas song.
What about the cover?
Cover. It's like, it's a bit weird, isn't it? The cover.
It's totally like playing on 60s psychedelic stuff, isn't it? But again,
it is.
I would have it on my wall.
Yeah, I would as well. Signed. I'll have a signed copy of Ringo. He doesn't sign shit anymore, does he? Sorry, Ringo.
Spoiled.
But the thing is, right, I mean, with all these artists and stuff like that, you are hiding nothing, really, if you bring out a Christmas album, aren't you? There's a, as soon as you say it or in the music press or whatever, that, you know, one of these guys is going to bring out a Christmas album, your immediate thought is, oh, well, that's going to be shit, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
More than any other time of year or thing, whether it's a film, a TV show, a song, or whatever, it just exists in its own bubble, doesn't it?
Uh-huh.
They're judged by different standards. So you think, oh, Rod Stewart, Christmas album out, fucking hell, that's going to be awful.
Yeah.
But as long as it's fun, it doesn't matter, because that all of it, and that's why I think the Ringo one wins. Like, ultimately, it's a good thing because it's fun. And
yeah, I agree.
You want Ringo to be fun, and you want Christmas songs to be fun. Mm-hmm. And it wins on that. And I think
it does.
Yeah, as long as you're not trying to make a fucking serious Christmas album, I don't know,
aye,
like Mike Oldfield or something like that, then you probably like,
hey, there's nothing wrong with Mike Oldfield.
I know, I'm pulling it.
But yeah, I mean, there's always a Christmas time, there's always these kind of generic sort of albums that come out, you know, Michael Ball or whatever, you'll see them every year. I mean, how many friggin' albums is Michael
Ball? You'll get some hate mail from Wardy now, mind.
I cannot stand the fella, to be honest. But it, I mean, and this isn't like that. Like you say, it is a bit more fun, isn't it? And the fact that I think he broke up with his record company when this came out, didn't he, Mercury, because they didn't do any press for it or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm disappointed that I've only just heard, you know, the first song from this album. This is the first time I've listened to it, so because I would have been listening to it every Christmas.
Yeah, it's good. It's true.
It's 1999.
At least that one song should be on your Christmas playlist. Come on, Christmas.
Should?
Christmas, come on.
It should. Yeah.
And Ringo's vocals on it are good as well. Like, and like they are good.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, that's they Ringo's. Are. So yeah, we're not really doing a versus kind of thing, like him versus Dylan. But we are a bit. So Dylan's Christmas in the Heart. 10 years later, 2009.
It's not Celebrity Deathmatch, Cliff.
That's funny, that, wasn't it?
Is it?
Christmas in the Heart from 2009. I am a huge Dylan fan. I own pretty much everything he's done. What about you? I'll give my opinions on this after. But what do you think? When did you first hear it? What did you think about when you heard it? Etc.
Well, I first heard it when it came out, which, like you say, was in 2009. And at first, I didn't know whether it was a joke, whether it was supposed to be kind of jovial or funny, or whether it was serious or not. But I think it is serious. And on the listening to it today, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I really, really loved it. I love the tradition about it, the songs throughout it and stuff. And what I was like, opposed to the Ringo one, it kind of reminded us of like being at school and sitting in assembly at Christmas and
I wanted to mention
carols
that kind of
and
stuff.
Hymns. Mm-hmm. So it sort of evoked more memories than the Ringo one did, because it's a little bit more traditional and stuff. I really like this one. I prefer this one. I prefer the Ringo one personally.
Well, look, Bob Dylan really should be bringing out better albums than Ringo, shouldn't he? Like, regardless of what they're about.
You're right about that.
So, on that, of course, not all of his albums are great, but if you're going to stack them together, then it should be. But for me, so the song, he brought a single out called Must Be Santa, which I'd never heard before. It's a cover. All of these songs are covers, but I'd never heard that song before. Uh-huh. It's such a fun song. And the video for it is such a fun video. Also, he's got like a wig on, straight hair and a Santa hat. And he's like at this Christmas party that's going wrong. And he's standing there all kind of deadpan singing this song with these like this straight wig. And also, I love...
Yeah, it's strange.
His voice, because, like, let's face it, with 2009, Bob Dylan's voice was always an acquired taste. I think people who say shit are wrong, and you know, you might not like him or you might not like it, but whatever. It is what it does, and it does it very well. I think even the biggest fan, as you get into the 2000s, you've got to admit that his voice is not what it was, and it already wasn't a, you know, he's not going to win any singing competitions from it. So you've got this croaky, this voice doing This Must Be Santa song, and there's a couple of lines in it that I absolutely love. And I love the bit where he goes, who left this way? Who, who? Santa left this way. Who, who? I absolutely love that bit. But I'd never heard this song before. I mean, I remember, just seemed really fun. It just seemed fun.
Yeah.
That's not what you associate with Bob Dylan. And that's why I think that's the hook for the album.
It is.
But then the album,
I heard it, I think that's why I thought, you know, is this, the first time I heard it anyway, is this like a joke? Is he doing this as a joke? But it's not, it's more than that, isn't it? It's like you've just said there, it's just fun. I mean, it's just Bob Dylan having fun. I mean, he said about this particular album and stuff like that, he's grew up all these songs, so why shouldn't he sing them? Do you know what I mean? And they're great. They're honestly really, really good.
In typical Dylan fashion, obviously he grew up Jewish, so he wouldn't have been celebrating Christmas really when he was a kid. He converted.
I think he said that even though he grew up Jewish, he still felt like these songs were his type thing.
I guess you know? Can't avoid it in America. Yeah, like there would have been Christmas overload and all that
anyway.
Kind of stuff.
But
yeah, I get it. But just another layer to Dylan's kind of playfulness. I grew up with these songs. Well, really, you grew up being a fairly orthodox Jew. So,
well, that's the thing. That's the thing. that's the thing. You see, that's what it's got two sides to it. This album, really, hasn't it? Is it serious? And I think it is, because you're talking about like the playful side of Dylan and stuff like that. And that's what's interesting, isn't it? Is it serious or is it not? Well, is he just having fun? There's like the cover, the front cover is like a really traditional sort of scene, isn't it? And then the flip side, that's like that Playmate and stuff with stockings and suspenders on. Betty Page, isn't it?
Yeah.
So again, it's like it's two sides. It's
honestly,
like
flipped. This is what's why I love Bob Dylan, because you could have this conversation about pretty much any album he's done, but usually it's about like, what does this lyric mean? What does that lyric mean? Or like it's all death and, you know, murder songs and all of that kind of stuff. But this is like covers of traditional Christmas hymns, carols, pop songs, and you still end up having the same conversation. What does it really mean? Is he serious? Is he trying to wind us up? Is he? And like everything with Dylan, I think it's everything. I think it's both. I think he is trying to wind people up, but I think he does stuff with sincerity.
Yeah.
After this album came out, he not straight away, but he's had two or three albums with just like straight ahead covers of old American songbook songs, early Frank Sinatra and stuff like that. In fact, one of them was a triple album. So he's going, now this is music that means something to me when I was growing up. I care about it, and you know, how dare you say that I'm taking the piss? And really, I believe him, because after this, he brought out some real straight ahead albums of covers of like Cole Porter songs and stuff like that. That you think, what the, like, where? But you know, that's Bob Dylan, isn't it? That's where he comes from. I think he knows that people will think that, well, is this a piss take or not?
Yeah.
But he also is delivering it with utmost sincerity. There's a great quote where he's saying, like you said, he's saying, how dare people?
Yeah,
I'm paraphrasing, but he's saying, how dare people say that I'm taking the piss? Like, they don't know what I'm about. Why would I take, these are traditional songs that I love and I want to give, I want to pay respect to. Like I do a folk song, I do a cover of a folk song, I pay respect to it. These are folk songs, essentially. These are songs that get passed down by generation to generation to generation. And yeah. what's the difference with a Christmas song or a different folk song? So, like, how dare you assume that I'm taking the piss?
Well, that's the thing. That's a funny thing, because the first time I listened to it in 2009, I thought it was a piss take. Now, when I've listened to it back, now, I don't think it's a piss take at
all. You think
all.
It's because you're older?
With sincerity, I don't know. I don't know if that's the reason. But he is, you know, doing these songs sincerely. And you can tell that he loves these songs. You know what I mean?
2009, we're 28. We're probably a little bit more cynical than we are now.
Maybe. I mean, you get cynical with age, I guess. I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? You get more cynical as you get older.
When you're younger.
Yeah, that's true. But I think, you know, he is doing these songs straight. And he does love these songs.
Yeah,
he wants to do them. I'll pay them respect, you know what I mean?
I think for me, it was that single that I'd never heard that song before, and that's a pop song, right? That's upbeat, must be Santa, and I love it. I mean, it's perfect for Dylan, the man with the most words in any, other than Leonard Cohen, with the most words in any songs, you know, like just lyrics after lyrics after lyrics. And then he's singing those, you know, Dasha, Dancer, Branson, Vixen, blah, 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 blah. Or like firing off all those words.
Yeah.
It's almost like he's picked that song because he knows that he's known for like wordy songs that he fires off lyrics in. But I also think then when you listen to the album, that's the outlier in the album track listing, isn't it? Because the rest of them are really all traditional songs. And I think... I hadn't heard that before. I thought it was really funny. Also, the video. Do you know who directed the video?
Yes, it was Joel Edgerton's brother, wasn't it?
Yeah, Nash. Every time we do an episode, there's always some kind of link.
There is.
Yeah, I think
the carols and the hymns and things like that, they're the ones that sort of... When you listen to music, you know, you want it to sort of make you think about something in your past or... You know, evoke some kind of emotion in you, and especially with Christmas songs, you certainly want that.
Yeah,
and it was with all the hymns and carols that came. Like I say, I was just lying on my bed listening to the whole album, and I was thinking about, you know, assemblies and
honestly, that's what I've been thinking of as well. That's what I've been thinking
these
of.
Songs. And I think the best albums are the ones that do that. You know what I mean? Evoke like an emotional response in you. And this one did. So, I think it's great. And if Bob Dylan is bringing out, you know, covers of these songs, I want to listen to them. And I'd rather listen to this than some of the nonsense that we've talked about before, Michael Ball or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Like,
I want to hear Bob Dylan sing these songs.
I agree. I think he's, and like you say, he has done them faithfully. He hasn't messed around with them. He hasn't tried to rework the arrangements or anything like that. And I think that's what people didn't understand. You know, he's singing, I think when it gets into, I think it's the second song maybe where he goes, "Do you hear what I hear?" His voice. Uh-huh. I mean, if you're not used to his voice, it's particularly cracked on that, isn't it? You know, his voice is very, like, croaky on this album, very much. I think he's got better, actually, with his singing. Maybe he's done some exercise or whatever, but this is quite cracked and croaky. I think that one, a casual listener might be like, "Fucking hell, what's this?"
Yeah.
Well, I think Odyssey, by the time you get to, and this one for me is a real kind of like tub thumper, tear jerker kind of thing. When Bob Dylan sings "I'll Be Home for Christmas," I think it's probably one of the most emotional songs I've ever heard.
Yeah, I mean, they're amazing. Like you've just said there, it sort of evokes emotions in you. And I think that's what Bob Dylan's been doing ever since he picked up the guitar,
one way or another,
he?
Yeah. One way or another, different emotions for different people at different times. But this is nostalgia, right? And this is what we talk about a lot. And Christmas is certainly about nostalgia. And this is one of the reasons I love Christmas, but one of the reasons why it's a very emotional time, because you end up thinking about when you were younger, all those times that are past, things that you were good, things that were bad, things that you really enjoyed, and stuff like that. And I've been thinking a lot about those assemblies at school, making the, we had to make the shakers, the paper shakers, and shake them. And then there'd be like jingle bells would appear and Santa would turn up. And
Santa would turn up. That's exactly what I was thinking of.
I've been thinking about it all week.
Yeah, the gasps of the kids.
You're like waiting for you. Everybody's like made these paper shaker things and you're in that assembly.
Yeah.
And you're shaking and hoping that, you know, you're told that, oh, he might come.
Yeah,
everybody in there, however many people are shaking these things. I'm talking about primary school.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you hear like the sleigh bell, jingle bell kind of sleigh bells. And everyone's like, oh, he's coming, he's coming. And you're so excited to think.
I know.
And the guy
it's very up. Strange that we were thinking of exactly the same thing.
Genuinely, I've been thinking that all week. Like, that's the thing that's been playing on my mind.
Well, that was exactly what I was thinking of when I was listening to it. And I think... You know, that's a brilliant thing. I'm thankful for Bob Dylan for making this album to make me remember those type of things again. That's brilliant, I think, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I agree. So, yeah, good on you, Bob. I love you.
Good on you, Bob. I mean, the other thing that I was like, almost like a fantasy thing was like, if Bob Dylan was me granda, right? And he was just singing these songs at Christmas, around the Christmas tree, that would just be amazing. Wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be good. That would be good.
Bob, Grandad Dylan. Yeah, it would be class. But yeah, I love this album. I think it's class. I think it's really good.
So yeah, I think like two very different albums, but like two people that we love. One, I think, has got a lot more heart and soul than the other one. Although I'm not like, I don't want to knock Ringo for his pop sensibilities or the guy who's writing songs with them because he really taps into some nostalgia, but I think that nostalgia is for like late 60s, early 70s glam rock, and stuff like that. I think Dylan taps into actually your emotional psyche with his stuff. It's not for everyone,
definitely.
People will think that it's weird and they won't like you singing and stuff like that, but like, I just think. Whatever, he's Bob Dylan, I love him. And he's doing a Christmas album. I'm having it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Did very well in Scandinavia, that album.
Did it?
Yeah, if you look at the chart positions in the top five in all the Scandinavian countries.
Well, all the proceeds in that, the royalties from Dylan went to charity as well.
So that's another good thing about it. Like it was all food charities, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a crisis and Feeding America and stuff like that, wasn't it? So for a good cause.
I buy it again.
Brilliant. I think you should. I think you should. Like I say, I wouldn't mind it on vinyl, you know, for next Christmas. I think it'd be good. Buying it
feels like one of those that the more crackly it gets, the better it would be.
Yeah. Like
it's a late night one, isn't it? It's not one you're going to put on when you first get up on Christmas Day. But it is one that you might put on at like 9 o'clock when you're having a little drink in the lead up to Christmas. So yeah.
Put it this way, it's the best Christmas album that I've heard for 30 years or whatever, maybe it's longer. Because it's just singles, isn't it? Really, at Christmas it's Slade and those compilations.
And those guys come back every year, but I think there are.
But this is a full album.
There's a couple of albums that I really like that maybe not a little bit off the beaten track, not massively populist. A guy who I really like.
Christmas ones.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Go on then. What other?
A guy I really like in general called Josh Rouse. He's an American singer-songwriter. I might mention him to you before. I really love him. Very easy country rock kind of singer-songwriter. A few albums ago, quite 70s. Just lovely. Lovely singer-songwriter. Mm-hmm. Last year, he brought out an album called The Holiday Sounds of Josh Rouse, which is, again, kind of half covers and a couple of originals in there. He's kind of re-brought that out this year, which I think you have to do with Christmas albums. And he's added on a couple of new songs, including a cover of All I Want for Christmas Is You, which is I listened to today. It's really nice. I would recommend Josh Rouse's album, Holiday Sounds of Josh Rouse. And also, if you want something a little bit more kind of punch you in your face. And there's a band called, I'm going to say Mara, but I think they would pronounce it Mara, which is bad.
Well, we call it Mara.
Yeah. And they're a band in general that I think you would really like. I would describe them as a cross between Bruce Springsteen and Oasis.
All right.
They're from New Jersey, but they're two brothers, very rock. So there's a lot of like the two brothery kind of shared vocals, but also the kind of Springsteen-y big anthems. Great, great band. I think I first heard of them by reading Nick Hornby's book. Obviously, huge music fan. I saw them a couple of times. No, I think I've only seen them once. I meant to see them another time, but the tour got cancelled. Anyway, they've got an album called Christmas Kind of Town, which is like a bit of a concept album. It's a little bit like it's a radio broadcast for an hour with them and other people singing different songs and jingles in between the songs and stuff.
Yeah.
Love it. Absolutely love it. You will love that album, I think. I think Lennon might like it as well if you played it, because it's quite funny. It's good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Mara, Christmas Kind of Town, and Josh Rouse, Holiday Sounds of Josh Rouse, are a lot more chilled out. I think they're two recommendations for me for
nice
modern Christmas albums.
What we need is for public service broadcasting to do a Christmas album. That would be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be excellent, wouldn't it? That would be absolutely awesome. We should tweet them after this.
We should, yeah. To do it. I know. Yeah, that would be good, wouldn't it?
Good. So that's the end of what I've got to talk about, really, until we get to the music. I think you might have a little quiz.
Yeah, I've got a little quiz for you, matey chops. Just a little one. So we've talked a lot about, you know, Christmas toys and stuff like that. What I've got here is a list of the top-selling Christmas toys from 1980 to 1989.
Oh, wow.
And you've got to tell us the name of the toy, obviously, and for a bonus point, see if you can guess the year.
Okay.
So cast your mind back to the 80s when we're just wee nippers.
Okay.
What do you think is in there? Have a guess at a toy
Guess the biggest selling toys of the 80s.
You've just got to guess the biggest selling toys. We've mentioned a couple already.
Well, like specific
on this one. So we've, at the start of the podcast, we mentioned one.
Yeah.
So just cast your mind back.
I imagine He-Man in like 1984.
Well, that's close. 1981 is He-Man.
Really? So 1981?
1981,
that was when those toys came out.
Yeah, that was.
Well, how come we were playing with them when we were like 8 and they were still coming out?
I've got no idea.
I think that's false.
That's not.
There must be Star Wars when Return of the Jedi came out. Was that 83?
Yeah, no Star Wars on the list, unfortunately.
Really? No?
No Star Wars.
Teddy Ruxpin in there?
I knew you'd get Teddy Ruxpin.
Is he there?
Well, of course he is, yeah. What year do you think Teddy Ruxpin was?
86.
Close, 85. 85. Any other?
I can't think what might be. A slinky.
No slinky.
No, of course not.
No slinkies. Think of computer games. What do you think in the 80s? Computer consoles.
Mean actual consoles. So, when did the Mega Drive come out? That was probably 91, right? But a Nintendo, a NES.
Oh, 90s, yeah.
A NES.
A NES, yes. Uh-huh. What year do you think the NES was?
80?
80? 86?
I don't know.
What about the smaller NES?
Oh, the Game Boy's got to be in there for like 88 or something like that.
Yeah, close 89, uh-huh. You're missing a few girls' toys. Well, one or two.
She-Ra, one of them.
She-Ra's not one of them.
No, it is.
What about ones he had to adopt?
Yeah, he adopted. What?
You had to adopt, yeah. The girls, when they got them, they got an adoption certificate with them. They were actually born these dolls as well.
Oh, is it like Cabbage Patch Kids or something like that?
That's right.
Yeah, they're in there. Okay.
They're in there. 1983 for them.
Rainbow Bright. The Care Bears.
Rainbow Bright. Care Bear's not in there, no. What is in there is Glowworms from 1982. Remember Glowworms?
Oh, really? Yeah, okay.
Aye. Rubik's Cube, 1980. I never had a Rubik's Cube.
We did, but I mean...
Did you?
Yeah, but...
Did you take the stickers off and just pretend you had done it? Because that's what people used to, like, used to
you
do,
could pull
it?
The blocks out. And I probably totally fucked it. So, I mean, I probably really messed it up for anybody else who wanted to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I knew you didn't mean that you actually fucked it. 1984, Transformers.
Nice.
I thought you might have gotten that one. And 1988, The Turtles. But I think you got the rest. So well done to you.
Good. I like it. Again, like, it's Christmas, yeah. Isn't it? Nostalgia, it's fun.
It is. Cliff,
yes.
What was your favourite Christmas present? Best one, man.
As a kid or of all time?
What do you think? All time.
Oh, shit. I don't know. Probably as a...
Not sure.
I remember going back to my mum and dad's about, I don't know, maybe when I was about 28, something like that. I got a really good, like, framed Beatles picture that I really loved. Like, it was amazing. Like, one of the first ever, I think it was the first photo shoot. Around like a car, like a dilapidated car. Really loved that. As a kid, like I said before, so spoiled. Like, another thing that Christmas always makes us think of is just how much my mom and dad, like, sacrifices, maybe a bit strong. I don't want to make it sound like it was any kind of anything more than it was.
No, but it's true. They did
spend the entire year making sure that we had a good Christmas.
Yeah, and same as mine.
I think, like, now thinking back, like, that's the thing that makes me kind of really happy and appreciative now, that knowing that they went to those efforts to make sure we had a good time and had great presents and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's the kind of thing that you don't forget, is it?
Yeah, definitely. For sure. That's.
I mean, Castle Grayskull. Castle Grayskull.
Castle Grayskull. Mine was a blue and yellow BMX that me mom and dad did the sort of, I don't know whether parents do this now, where they pretend that they haven't got you the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's hidden somewhere. It was hidden under like this furry rug or whatever. And there's this picture of us sort of with a big shock look on my face. And it was the fastest bike in the street.
Oh, class.
So there.
I got a BMX, but I couldn't ride a bike. I don't think I could ever actually ride that. I couldn't ride a bike until I was about 11 or something. So,
really?
I remember the present, but it always had to be with stabilizers on. I couldn't ride it. I probably wasted that present. Like, I didn't do it justice. That's on me. That's definitely on me.
I think I got progressively worse at riding the bike.
I remember being horrible shit. We used to crash into like stuff all the time. We were both terrible at riding a bike.
Of course we were. Yeah. My mom was on the bus once and I was riding probably the same blue BMX down the wrong side of the street on the main road. She was terrified. So I think I was banned from riding the bike for a couple of months and stuff. Bit of a nutcase. But there you go. So that was good. I enjoyed this.
You got very loud.
Listen to them albums, Cliff. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it's good. Like, Christmas, you got to listen to some cheesy stuff. You got to watch some cheesy stuff. You got to watch the kind of Christmas horrors, the Christmas cheese, Christmas comedies. Listen to the music. Next week, we're going to talk about a new Christmas film. Which might be a little bit controversial, but we'll get onto that next week. After that, I think we'll go a little bit nostalgic. But I think it was, like, it's what Christmas is all about. And I think we've got a special Christmas song next week as well, which is great.
We do, yes.
We'll talk more about that next week, obviously. This week, we've got some music from a new up-and-coming band, which... really good, actually. Listened to it before it came on. Really like it.
Yes.
Thank you for listening, everyone. Brett, have you got anything else you want to say before I wrap it up?
No, that's quite about it from me.
Okay,
I think you've heard enough from me.
Okay, yes. Well, probably about 15 years ago, but okay.
You little shit.
Right, thanks for listening, everyone. You can follow us on Twitter at FCircusPod. You can find us on Facebook, Brett and Cliff's Flea Circus Podcast. You can follow us, follow the podcast and like it and subscribe to it. Give us a rating on Apple, Amazon, all the other different places. Like, if you do like it, give us a good rating, leave us a review, and it'll just mean more people will get to us. That's how it works. It's also a little bit ego driven, but of course it means that it means more people listen to this stuff. We appreciate you listening.
Yeah,
we're happy going into the Christmas period. This is almost a year since we started. I've just got the email saying we need to renew the license and all that shit. So, yeah, so thanks everyone for listening. We've got a few good weeks of Christmas stuff coming up. You can listen to a song called Jetlag Lenses, which we're going to play now, by a band called Lines from a Poem from the northeast of England, near us, or Teesside. Three-piece band.
Yeah.
Red Car, Mask and Saltburn. It's a really, really nice song. I really like it. It'll probably be starting right about now. So I hope you enjoy it. This is Jetlag Lenses by Lines from a Poem. Brett, thank you very much. Look forward to chatting more music and films with you next week. Peace and love. Peace out. Merry Christmas. Take care, everyone.
Jet-lag lenses. My mind's in different time zones, and I'm